Good morning and welcome to Making a Change for Good. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning, Ashwini.
So our assignment from yesterday, go back and review the conversation in your head that you've jotted down about this issue to see if there are any voices you've not captured. Example, voice missing. I'm afraid of what I'll see if I look closely at this topic. All right, here's our first caller. You are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Bob in San Francisco.
Hello, Bob.
Well, this combined with the drawing the portraits and looking at the voices was really helpful because it just all seemed very familiar to other supposedly different processes I've looked at in practice. And it seems like there's so much around, you know, this is like this area of life, like this content area is one that it's scary. I should be, you know, I need to stay in this sort of posture, and this was in my drawings, of like just being kind of small and hidden away, and that it's safer to kind of stay in essentially the dark room with conditioning.
Because there's a feeling of being in control, right? I may be in the dark with something hateful, but at least I know how to do this, that nothing else is going to happen.
Yeah. And it just looks like I was saying before, like so many other pieces of mm-hmm. content or practice where if I shrink my world down into this small, you know, place, I can, like you said, control that. And I can, you know, I can live this, you know, small, insignificant life, you know, if I just stay right here.
Yeah. And of course, when we're feeling it, it feels safe because that's what we're told. But then when we describe it, we realize, well, that's horrible. You know, I'm supposed to live a small, frightened, insignificant life in order to be safe. Wow.
Yeah.
It's not a good trade-off.
Go ahead. Well, I was just going to say that it's only when it's unexamined that it seems like this is a great trade-off.
Precisely. Right. That's where I was going to, because we're just told that delving into this is going to be a disaster. We don't know that. And you're, as you've said, this is like a lot of other things, right? So I can only guess that you've seen a lot of other content in your life that you've delved into that you weren't supposed to. And not only is it not a disaster, it's expansive. It's fine. You're happier.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because once, you know, the door is sort of cracked open, you know, what really becomes apparent is that what I'm actually protecting is just that relationship, and I'm shutting off possibility and connection.
Yes, precisely. Which is what ego is always trying to do, right?
Yeah, because if I don't see that possibility and connection, of course it seems like this is a safer place to be. And and it's like, you know, what gets put forward as this is risky is actually this is like you said, expansive. This is possibility. This is all. I don't know what it is, but I know it's better than where I am.
Right. That's it, isn't it? I'm in the dark room trying to see in the dark. Right now, I step out into the light, and everything is available. Everything is possible. But as long as I'm looking around in the dark, nothing is. And that's the That's the whole point of what we're doing, isn't it?
Yeah, and it just really points to, you know, why conditioning fights so hard to just taking that first step to just inquiry, what's going on here? Because it's just such a huge threat to the system.
Yeah, just looking, because conditioning is never looking, right? It's never looking in the way we're looking in awareness practice. It's just regurgitating unexamined beliefs and assumptions. And when we start looking, everything changes. Just the looking,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, if I am here and present and willing to look, everything is already different. Whatever I see is just going to be icing or gravy or whatever image we want to use for something good.
Yeah, and just in my experience, it just seems like that conditioning isn't prepared for that looking, you know?
Not at all.
It's a threat to it, but once I start doing it, if I'm willing to keep doing it, there really isn't a great response from conditioning. There might be backlash, there might be other things, but it's really not prepared for it.
That's right. And so what it does is just skulk off, right? It just shrinks and disappears looking for the next opportunity. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. Ooh, he can be distracted again. He'll go to sleep again sometime, and we'll have another shot.
Mm-hmm.
But it's never going to stand and fight, right? Which is, boy, once we get that, we realize we have the power. It will never stand and fight. It can't. It literally cannot stand up under scrutiny. It can only do what it does, appear to be real when we are in the dark, when we're asleep, when we're not paying attention.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right.
Well,
thank you so
very
much.
Exciting. Thank you, Bob.
Yes. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Bob. What I heard in that, Cherry, is that it's such a beautiful description of the process that we're in. We're either limited to the small, safe world of ego, or we can mm-hmm. step into the possibility of all that is and experience ourselves as all that is. But since mm-hmm. ego is a survival mechanism and we're identified with that, it feels like a life and death process to step outside the safety of the known limits to the mystery of the unknown. And so that is the training that we're doing in practice, is the ability to make that transition through fear, the fear of ego dying, by finding the compassion that can hold our hand through that transition.
Yes, well, and that's deeply significant, right? Because that fear is ego's fear, right? It's not my fear. I don't want to live a small, insignificant life in the dark. But the fear that I believe is my fear is ego's. And again, that's another one. As soon as we catch on to it, we realize it's like, you know, it's like jumping over something that you don't think you can jump over. Right? There's that, ooh, and then you're on the other side. And there's the wee that goes with that, right? So recognizing the, oh, no, is ego. Then we can say, I see, gotcha. Okay, this is a good direction for me. Here I go.
Well, and the reframing of the conversation. So if I'm being talked to by the ego, then it's a risky proposition, which is why we have to replace that conversation from a life conversation of this is possibility, tune into mm-hmm. the excitement, not into the fear.
Yes, yes, yeah, yeah, because they feel the same. They just have those different labels.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
All right, here's our next caller. You are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
This is Tony from Athens.
Hey, Tony.
Hey. Whoa. This has been quite a workshop. I learned a lot, seen a lot about resistance in the first week. of this, and then this morning I just stopped everything and spent close to 2 hours just getting caught up and just really, really facing looking at this issue. And a little shaky right now, but so one of the things, what I got to was seeing that there is kind of a, someone who feels kind of like a victim in personality or ego aspect, and then a lot of just really hurting parts, and it was kind of keeping me stuck in this focus and looking at this focus, but I'm sure it keeps me stuck in other areas of my life. But I did a lot of two-handed recording and listening this morning, and it was just so transformative. It's like there's some, these really hurting parts, it's really needed a lot of expression and a lot of compassion and understanding and acceptance. And it just feels so different now.
And Tony, do you have a sense of, so resistance has been there and it's been controlling you, right? And that is not a fun or happy place, as we all know. And then something enabled you to say, okay, I'm not doing that anymore. I'm gonna do the work. I'm going to get caught up. I'm going to... Do you know how you got there? What that... I don't want to use too much language to try to take you down, but somehow you said no to the resistance and yes to the practice. Do you know how that happened?
Well, a couple of things. One is I talked about the resistance on like a Reflective Listening Buddies call and on a couple of calls, and just was and recorded about the resistance, and that really helped. And then one of the earlier questions was, looking at my notes, it's like, why do you want to work on this? Is one of the first questions. And I've been kind of going back and forth, like working on some questions and then going back to others. And it was this, I don't want to die with all this, with pain and hurt and blame and shame. And also, I don't want to spend whatever life I have left living in the shame and the blame and the hurt and all of that. That was a big motivator.
So, so two components. And probably the first one that is of greatest significance, you started talking about the resistance. Right? You began to name it and look at it instead of looking through it. Instead of being identified with it, you stepped out of it and started talking about it and what it was doing, right? And from that disidentified place, you were able to see what the resistance was holding in place, right? Because all of that hurt and pain and suffering is being held in place behind that resistance, which is why ego is fighting so hard at that blockade, right? And so when you realize that, you realize, I don't want all of this in my life. I don't want anybody to suffer. I don't want this pain. I don't want the blame. I don't want the shame. I don't want any of this in my life. And so I'm going to reach across that barricade, which ego cannot stop us from doing. And I'm gonna get those people and give them a helping hand and bring them out into the light.
Exactly. Yes. Yes.
Freedom fighter. That's
Oh, I love that. I'm gonna write that in, freedom fighter. Yes. Yes. Because it just makes. I mean, just to give them lots of space and expression, and acceptance and understanding, it was just amazing.
And let them be done. Let them be done, right? Because as soon as we're free, we don't need to do that any longer. Right? We don't need to live in those stories. They, you know, so with aspects of the personality, aspects of ego, once they're freed from ego's grip, they're free.
Oh, I'm so glad. Gosh, you said that. Yeah, that was very significant.
Yeah, so you want to keep them in your circle of conscious awareness, right? So that the relationship that they're in now is with you, conscious, compassionate awareness, right?
Mm.
If we turn away and go back into, you know, we move on, forget all those suffering mm-hmm. people, and we get pulled into whatever distraction ego can pull us into today, then they will eventually get pulled back into those old stories. But uh-huh. if we keep all of this in conscious awareness, ego doesn't have a chance to drag them back into the dark.
Okay. So how do we keep them in this conscious compassionate awareness? I mean, like...
So as you do your recording and listening, from mm-hmm. now on, you check in. So now we've, just in this one retreat, we've got three aspects of life here that we're working on. So you're checking in on how are you doing with self-care? How are you uh-huh. doing with finances? How are you doing with sexuality? Okay. And making sure that those voices trying to drag us back into the dark room are not operating. You'll see if ego is starting to talk to you about, well, you know, you can't spend any money on that because you recognize that story and say,
I see. Okay.
We stop right here. And what is true is, and then you talk about what is, make a recording about what is true.
Okay, great. Okay. That's mm-hmm. excellent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
And it gets easier and easier, Tony, because as people are noting, the process is the same, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and we tend to be way more boring than we want to think. So the ego thought processes are pretty repetitious. And as soon as we catch on to them, then we realize, whoa, okay, that's right. I need to record about that. I need to listen to some recordings that remind me that, right? So it's not like there's an endless amount of information that we're going to have mm-hmm. to deal with. Thank God.
I see. Yeah. Makes it more manageable.
More manageable. Yeah. All right.
Thanks, okay, Tony. Great. Thank you so much, Sherry. Thank you, Ashwini. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks, Tony. Sherry, the thing I wanted to underline about that call really is if we stay in the world of practice, we're going to see and see through everything we need to see through. Because
exactly.
there's a way in which Tony was sort of demonstrating the practitioner's sort of creed, right? It's the short recitation. If I'm suffering, it's because I'm choosing something over ending suffering. And I'm not here to create and cling to beliefs. I'm here to pay attention. And so as soon as I start to look at that with the tools that are available in all the training and practice I've done, then I just break through whatever it is the suffering is because I'm interested in ending it.
Yes. Because I like living in the light. I like yes. unconditional love. It's
yeah.
fun to be happy.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we really get to when we've suffered enough, we stop suffering. It's what Tony said. Mm-hmm. The why is I don't want to suffer. I don't want to die
yes.
suffering around this stuff.
Yeah. And I don't want to die in this suffering, which is very Buddhist orientation, right? Because the karma is going to go right on. Whatever I don't clean up in this lifetime is going to go on to some poor little baby somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
We suspect, we don't know this, of course, but we strongly suspect it since it kind of explains our lives. And so mm-hmm. we want to take advantage of the opportunity and do it now. Face it all.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, here's our next caller. You are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, this is Scott in Asheville.
Hello, Scott.
Hey. So I am interested in what got me interested was the assignment being about what was missing, what voice was missing. Mm-hmm. And when I look at, like, the example of and hearing people being resistant to working on this because it's a taboo topic, I looked and said, well, is there some resistance to that for me? And there's not. So that's what was missing, and it's actually truly missing. And I tried to look at it to see if that resistance was there, and it's not. And that mm-hmm. brought me to another place, which is I really do want to work on this. And where that took me was with today's peace quote being about what suffering is, wanting something different than what is. That's exactly what I'm doing. I'm wanting something different than what is. And mm-hmm. my relationship to this topic is it's a huge distraction, and I want that energy for other things. So I want it to be different.
So that's kind of backing you into a little corner there, huh? So and really it's the same process, but different, little different direction. So you see sexuality as a distraction, that the amount of energy that goes into sexuality in your life is more than you want to have kind of captured by that subject. You want that energy available for other things. And so what you're wanting to explore is how to do that, how to have that happen. Is that it?
Yeah, and I guess part of it is that it's tough to separate sexuality from the desire for relationship because it's a factor. And I'm trying to say, okay, this is the topic. This is not about relationship. This is about sexuality, and trying to keep them separate. But there's definitely some gray area there. And basically, it's, as you know, in working with me, that I am totally life goal of get a partner. And that's just one of the elements of it. And there are lots of other places I could be putting my energy right now, and definitely the sexuality piece is part of it.
Yeah, that's really interesting because where it's got you is you want a life partner. And part of having a life partner is a sexual partner. But those two don't necessarily go together. Now, I bet if you're like an awful lot of us, we started out with thinking having a sexual partner was going to lead to a more lasting relationship, which doesn't necessarily follow, does it? And so then, of course, it...
And how that factor comes out early in the game.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So it makes me wonder about looking for a life partner with whom sexuality is not a particular issue.
Well, that's interesting. That was a different direction than where I was going, but that's definitely a worthwhile place to go.
Because a lot of people, at least in my experience, have very close partnership relationships that are not sexual.
Right.
Yeah. And if there's a sexual component, there may not be a sexual component anywhere in the person's life. But if there is a sexual component, it might not involve that partner.
Yeah, I'm not totally following that because I am a sexual person. And if I were being sexual, it would have to be with my partner.
Uh-huh. Well, I'm just suggesting that is not the case for everybody.
That there are different people, and
Yeah, for you, you're the kind of guy who wants it all to be in one package.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So where I was going with this was in looking at the definition of suffering and wanting something different than what is, and looking at the piece of, well, what's the opposite of trying to fix it, which is accept it, and looking at how to compassionately accept who I am, and with that, at the same time, somehow redirecting that energy.
Yes, yeah, which, you know, again, puts us in a place with a lot of folks, right? A lot of folks who would like to have a romantic partnership, a sexual romantic partnership, and it's just not happening.
Right.
I don't know this, but I would bet that there are more of those than not. Right? Because not everybody.
Yeah, I would guess that as well.
Yeah, yeah. Not everybody in a partnership, even if it's a sexual partnership, is happy and satisfied, and it's the one they want. So that's a really that's a big deal, isn't it? I mean, it's what makes it very spiritual. It's the equivalent of more than anything, I'd like to be able to walk, and I can't. Or I would like, you know, whatever it is. It's the person with a terminal illness who just simply has to accept that this is what I've got. And it's the hardest place in the world, especially when it seems like it could be an easy fix. It seems like if I just look a little harder, or if I just try a little harder, or whatever it is, I can make this happen. But it sounds to me that what you're facing, what you're realizing is you can't make it happen. And giving energy to something that you can't make happen is really a waste of that energy. What you're really in a position to do is live your life, and should this come along for you, this person, then you'll be available for that. But until then, you're going to have your attention on the life that you have, accepting that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of what I'm going for in mm-hmm. the original opening of this topic, and why are you looking for it? That's pretty mm-hmm. much what I'm saying, what I'm writing. Mm-hmm. It's not what I'm doing.
Uh-huh.
I am still very interested in looking.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So, Scott, this will be a great two-handed recording opportunity, because you've got two folks there, right? One guy who wants to live his life and get on with it, right? And another who wants to pursue relationship. And it sounds like they are not good life partners.
Right. Yeah, and the one has had the stage for a long time and is not getting anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm serious about that. Some two-handed recordings with those guys, so that you can get some distance and some clarity about how you get hooked in to the one that is not actually taking you where you want to go, and how you are more in relationship with the one who is more aligned with where your life is now.
Okay.
Yeah?
It sounds interesting. So far, my two-handed recording exercises have not been very successful. It's usually two conversations with ego.
Okay. But seeing that, Scott, is big. Realizing that is big, because that's what we're doing, is getting clear on where this is coming from. Is it coming from center? Is it coming from authenticity? Or is it coming from ego? And having that clarity means that you're well down the road of being able to reach authenticity in these conversations and, by extension, the unconditional. So don't give
right.
up, okay? All right. Good man. All right. Thanks, Scott.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks,
bye. Scott. Sherry, and that brings us to the end of the show. One thought that dropped in around that the two-handed recording exercise that Scott was talking about is the very same place that Tony started off with, is that to do the two-handed recording exercise with the person who gets stuck in the two-handed, not being able to do the two-handed recording exercise.
Oh, brilliant. Yes.
It's the thing that Jen says, that the portal to wherever we need to go is right here. So whatever the mm-hmm. resistance is what you want to work with to break through mm-hmm. to wherever it is that, whatever is being held in place behind that.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's very good. That's excellent.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. So our assignment for today, is there a duality operating that you can identify? Your assignment, rearrange the voices on two sides of the duality. Which aspect of ego do you see on each side? Record and listen. Example, one side. I should look at this because there's so much resistance to looking. Good student. Second side. You don't have to practice with this. Skip this month. Private.
Yeah. Ooh, talk about the two voices of ego, huh?
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah.
Very
All right.
good.
Thanks,
right.
Sherry.
Thank you. Thanks, Ashwini. Thank you, everybody.
Take
Go
care
happy.
And talk tomorrow.
All right.